Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Many Zimbabweans assisted by a Panamanian law firm, Mossack Fonseca, to set up offshore accounts appear in the Panama Papers.
Some Zimbabweans say the central bank should offer amnesty to more than 280 local business people accused of externalizing millions of dollars.
All that money that's out there is actually a net foreign asset for us. I think let's have a neat way of actually bringing that money home.
And a High Court judge has paved the way for the possible suspension pending dismissal of Prosecutor General Johannes Tumana.
The ruling by the High Court is a very correct statement of the law of Zimbabwe. There was no basis for the application that Mr. Tumana had made.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Some business people and economic experts today urged the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe to offer amnesty to the more than 280 business people and individuals accused of illegally externalizing millions of dollars so that the funds can be brought back home or be legitimized as foreign assets. Some of the Zimbabweans are not on the leaked searchable data known as the Panama Papers published on Monday by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
In a suggestion to monetary authorities, former Kingdom Bank owner and Harare businessman Nigel Chanakira said instead of laying charges against offshore account holders, Zimbabwe could benefit immensely if it comes up with a neat way of bringing that money back home.
All that money that's out there is actually a net foreign asset for us. So the 288 people, bring it home. I would say we've got about $10 billion from what you were indicating per annum. I think let's have a neat way of actually bringing that money home or leveraging off it.
He said taking punitive measures could result in the country completely losing the money, which stands at about $10 billion, going by Reserve Bank estimates that the country has been losing $2 billion annually through externalization since dollarization in 2009. Chanakira said other nations like Nigeria have been prudent enough to realize those investments were foreign assets which should be brought home and taxed accordingly.
Countries like South Africa, where that money has been moved out as investments because people were cautious, they've been smart enough as to allow a period of declaration and sanitization of those funds. And then with a view, obviously, to then penalize people who keep those funds undeclared. I am therefore recommending to the government of Zimbabwe and specifically to the governor of the Reserve Bank to prudently consider those foreign assets.
Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce Deputy President Divine Njukula urged the central bank to consider Chanakira's idea.
The RBZ might need to manage the way people are going to be allowed to bring back the money that they've externalized in a manner that is not punitive.
These suggestions were also echoed by economics professor Ashok Chakravart.
It's not something unusual. Many countries have done it. They have actually given an amnesty for that kind of transaction whereby you can bring back funds and bring back resources. And there should be a fixed amnesty period, and it should be clearly defined in the law, and it's a very good proposal.
African Leadership Convention Chief Executive Officer Davidson Gomo said if there was conclusive evidence that the money was wrongly externalized, it must be brought back home.
But I think what's more important is really making sure we plug all the holes that allow for that externalization. That's far more important than what you're suggesting.
Confederation of Zimbabwe Retailers President Danford Mutashu said while he supported the idea of bringing back the money, those uncooperative must be prosecuted. Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya, while not committing to dialogue with the accused, said some of the cases were now being investigated by the police.
In terms of investigations, it's not been totally investigating arm. It's a regulating arm. Yes, we've got our financial intelligence unit, but this is goes through the normal process of investigation.
He called for discipline among business people, saying most of them were blaming the government for problems which they created themselves. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa could not be reached for comment on this matter. The Reserve Bank under Gideon Gono instituted several arrests of business people and bankers for externalizing funds, but none of them were convicted. Over 280 Zimbabweans appear in the Panama Papers, including some prominent business people. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, more than 70 Zimbabweans are among the names of individuals and companies fingered in the ongoing Panama Papers scandal. The names are in a searchable database published online early this week by the small but powerful journalist group, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, one of the journalists, Ray Choto, reports.
The names are in leaked documents belonging to a Panamanian law firm, Mossack Fonseca, which allegedly helped more than 200,000 clients to open offshore accounts without following exchange control and tax laws of many countries. The named Zimbabweans include two INSCO Africa directors, Zinona Kaudanoris and Michael Fowler, Zimplat's chief executive officer, Alex Membere, Sebo Chemicals boss, Jackson Murewa, Harare businessman, Victor Robinson Gapare, and others. Efforts to get a reaction from the named executives were fruitless. To see some of the names, visit our website www.voazimbabwe.com. By publishing the list, Studio 7 does not imply that the people named broke the law or to suggest any wrongdoing on their part. We publish the names since the Panama Papers have become an issue of public interest. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Ray Choto.
High Court Judge Lavender Makoni has paved the way for the possible suspension pending dismissal of Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana. Justice Makoni dismissed a request by Tomana that a retired judge or foreign judge preside over his case. The Judicial Service Commission, or JSC, says Tomana is not a fit and proper person to continue in the esteemed office of Prosecutor General in the wake of defying court orders from the Superior Courts. Tomana is facing criminal abuse of office charges or alternatively defeating the course of justice after he authorized the release of Solomon Makumbe and Silas Fupa, who are accused of plotting to bomb the First Family's business concern Alpha and Omega.
The Supreme Court also ruled that Tomana was in contempt of court after he defied court orders to issue certificates for the private prosecution of Bikita West legislator Dr. Munyaradzi Kereka and Telesol shareholder Jane Mutasa. Kereke was accused of allegedly raping an 11-year-old relative, while Mutasa was facing charges of swindling the company of airtime recharge cards worth millions of dollars. Tomana, in his urgent chamber application at the High Court, had argued that his post was at par with that of Chief Justice Chijikau Siku and that JSC had no power to institute proceedings leading to his possible removal from office. But constitutional law expert Professor Love Momaduku, president of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Justice Makoni's ruling is very sound.
The ruling by the High Court is a very correct statement of the law of Zimbabwe. There was no basis for the application that Mr. Tomana had made because the constitution of Zimbabwe is very clear on who constitutes our court. The constitution is clear. It takes the view that Zimbabwe, like any other country, is a sovereign country. And in a sovereign country, you go to court to meet the judges that you find there. It is not for the applicant to determine who should hear their case. So if you feel that a particular judge would not be fair or would not be the kind of judge that you expect to have an independent view, you simply apply for the recusal of that particular judge. But there is no basis whatsoever for an application that seeks to disqualify all members of the judiciary as they currently exist.
But is there no conflict of interest here, Professor Maduko, in that members of the court, especially the Constitutional Court, also constitute the Judiciary Service Commission, which has a complaint against Mr. Tomana and is also seeking to dismiss him?
It is not correct that members of the Judicial Service Commission are also all members of the Constitutional Court. There are a few members of the Constitutional Court who are members of the Judicial Service Commission, but they sit in the Judicial Service Commission in a different capacity. There are only two people from the Constitutional Court who are on the Judicial Service Commission. That is the Chief Justice and the Deputy Chief Justice.
Constitutional law expert Professor Lovemore Maduko, president of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
In another matter, a Harare High Court judge today dismissed an urgent application filed by Harare Mayor Bernard Manyanyeni, challenging his suspension by local government minister Xavier Kasuku Were. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Harare High Court Judge Mary Zimbadube dismissed Manyanyeni's urgent application, ordering both parties to bear the cost of the lawsuit. Manyanyeni's attorney, Zimbabwe Chimbwa, of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, told Studio 7 that the judge, who was sitting in her chambers, did not give reasons for her decision.
The court dismissed the urgent chamber application that had been filed. So in other words, as of now, he's not able to return to his office of mayorship.
Minister Kasuku Were told Studio 7 by phone that he was happy with the court's decision, but Chimbwa said he has instructions from Manyanyeni to appeal to the Supreme Court.
We will hopefully tomorrow be able to see the full reasons of the judgment, as today only the operative part was read. And depending on what he said there, we should proceed to appeal, as our client, Mr. Manyanyeni, is eager to appeal the decision of the court.
Kasuku Were told a ZANU-PF rally in Mashonaland Central Province 2 weeks ago that he would remain in courts to ensure that Manyanyeni does not return to townhouse. In his court papers, Manyanyeni argued that the minister's move to suspend him violated a section of the country's constitution that stipulates that an independent tribunal should be set up to hear a mayor's case before a decision to suspend or expel him or her is taken. Kasuku Were suspended Manyanyeni last month on allegations of insubordination and disobeying him over the Harare City Council's appointment of James Mushore as the city's town clerk. Following Manyanyeni's suspension, Harare City Council has suspended Mushore with no benefits, pending the finalization of Manyanyeni's case and determination on his queried appointment. Representative of residents' organizations in Harare refused to comment on today's judgment, saying they have a pending matter in the courts in which they are challenging Manyanyeni's suspension. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The governor of Zimbabwe's central bank, Dr. John Mangunjika, has denied that the soon-to-be-introduced bond notes is a response to the country's crippling cash shortage, saying it is an incentive for exporters. Mangunjika told AFP TV that only bond coins introduced in 2014 were designed to ease problems of change in a nation currently using multiple currencies after dumping its own currency in 2009.
The purpose of bond coins was to deal with the change problem. The purpose of bond notes is to deal with an incentive for exporters. But I think people are now confusing that the bond notes are coming here to cater for cash shortages. No, there's no relationship. This is an export incentive scheme.
That was Central Bank Governor John Mangunjika speaking with AFP TV. Initial reports from the governor's office indicated that the bond notes were set to also ease cash shortages. Critics say the governor is now flip-flopping on the issue. Due to political pressure and fears of violating the Zimbabwe's constitution, he told Reuters yesterday that the central bank would no longer convert half of all export earnings to euros and rand, backtracking from partial measures introduced last week to ease acute shortages of dollars. members.
All this has been met with condemnation from opposition groups. MDC founding president Morgan Tsvangirai's party does not like what the governor is doing. Tsvangirai told an international television station that these short-term measures don't make any economic sense.
You can rig an election, but you can't rig the economy. Precisely because this response is a reincarnation of the very same things that they will go back to, which is reviving the bond notes as a short-term measure. It becomes a permanent measure, but it doesn't make economic sense.
That was MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with journalists in Harare. The central bank governor will tomorrow respond to Zimbabweans' concerns over the constitutionality of the bond notes. Don't miss it here on Studio 7.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
this evening in the Diaspora Forum, we'll be featuring Tawanda Dzokora of the opposition Zimbabwe First Party.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
While a U.S.-led coalition works to stamp out Islamic State-linked atrocities such as today bombing in Baghdad that killed dozens, concern is growing that the effort could be hampered by internal political turmoil in Iraq as well as in Turkey.
A Democratic Republic of Congo court has ruled President Joseph Kabila can remain in office if no election takes place before his mandate expires at the end of this year. A Congo's constitutional court handed down the ruling today at the request of the ruling party.
Billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump is in the presumptive U.S. Republican presidential nominee, but he continues to struggle to win support for his maverick candidacy from key Republican figures. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Many Zimbabweans living in the diaspora are doing all what they can to make sure that democracy is achieved back home. Tawanda Dzokora, also known as Chief Shoshe, who is based in North Dakota, USA, is among people fighting for democracy in the Southern African nation. Dzokora is the communications director of the opposition party ZimFest, led by Maxwell Zeb Shumba. He is also information officer of the National Electoral Reform Agenda, or NERA, a grouping of opposition parties pushing for electoral reforms in Zimbabwe. The 45-year-old former teacher, who is now into energy business, has been in the diaspora for 15 years, five of them here in the U.S. First, he speaks about life in the diaspora.
I started off as a teacher in Botswana, living in the diaspora, and now I'm in the U.S., and there is nothing that is exciting, there's nothing that is good living in the diaspora, away from your family, away from your home. We want to be in Zimbabwe. If I can go back to Zimbabwe tomorrow, I'll be in Zimbabwe tomorrow, because it's not the same. I am a member of Zimbabwe First, and I'm the communications director for that political party, whose president is Dr. Zeb Shumba. I am also the person who is in charge of the information and publicity secretariat of an organization called NERA. This secretariat was given by NERA to ZimFest so that we can publicize the work of NERA.
You mentioned that you are a member of Zimbabwe First and also a part of the NERA committee. How do you juggle all this, considering that you live outside Zimbabwe?
Yes, I think, sometimes I wonder how I do it. You know, there's too much on my plate. But I think it is that will to do something for your country, that I want to see my country working again. I want to see all the Zimbabweans back at work. I want to see that Zimbabwe that I grew up in, you know, in the 70s, in the 80s, you know, the Zimbabwe that was admired by the world. And now we have just been reduced to beggars. And that realization will make you want to do something. And I just think that is what we should do as Zimbabweans, that we forget that we are in America, we are in the UK, we are in Australia. We just try to find something that we can do to make our country the way it was, the way we want to leave it to our children, the way we want our grandchildren to see Zimbabwe. We don't want our children, we don't want our grandchildren to be living in the Zimbabwe that we have right now, the Zimbabwe that there's no freedom of expression, the Zimbabwe where 90% of the people are not working, the Zimbabwe where if you just walk there and say something wrong about Mugabe, you are in jail or you disappear. We don't want a Zimbabwe like that.
Your party president lives in the diaspora. You live in the diaspora. Can we say this is a party in exile?
It is not a party in exile. Definitely it's not a party in exile. Two people, three people, or four people don't make a party. A party is a party for the people. Zimbabwe First is a party that was formed by the people for the people. So the fact that Dr. Shumba or myself or some of the leaders are here is neither here nor there, because the party is for the people. And there are people in Zimbabwe. 80% of the leadership of Zim First is in Zimbabwe.
What else are you doing besides politics?
Personally, I've for the people of Zimbabwe, I try by all means to help as much as I can. And I belong to a church known as Zimbabwe Methodist Church. And we gather things around, we buy things, we donate money, and every year or every summer we send someone to Zimbabwe to go and distribute those things.
What else can you tell Zimbabweans in the diaspora?
As much as it looks greener outside the country, I want to tell Zimbabweans that warm is best. Yes, warm is not okay right now, but there is no one. There is no one who is going to get our country working again. There is no one who is going to change the way things are in Zimbabwe right now except the people of Zimbabwe. And the people of Zimbabwe doesn't necessarily mean the people who are in Zimbabwe. The people who are here in the diaspora should find a part, should find something that they do to ensure that they are part of the solution.
That was Tawanda Jokora, ZimFest Communications Director, on the phone from North Dakota here in the United States.
We now hand you over to Chioniso Jani in the Youth Show. Time to engage.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chioniso Jani, your host for Time to Engage. Today, we have a very amazing young lady, and her name is Tembi, and she's going to tell us the way she loves to help, especially teenagers, to live in a drug-free world. Hi, Tembi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Tembi, I was reading your profile, finding out what you love to do, and I see you're into all this campaigning. Tell us more about the campaigns that you do.
I work with the youth of Zimbabwe, and we are into campaigns like creating a drug-free generation, stopping early child marriages. We just want to have fun educating the youth, but at the same time, stopping every single problem in the society in terms of drug abuse and early child marriages.
So can you tell us more about the places you're going to? I see you're concentrating on rural areas. Why?
All right. The youth in rural areas are mostly affected with the early child marriage, unlike in the more developed towns like Harare and Loero. So we were concentrating more on the affected areas in Zimbabwe because we found that a lot of the youth in Zimbabwe are accustomed to traditional ways of doing things that incorporate getting married at a very, very young age because of cultural reasons or because of poverty or traditional reasons.
Is there a lot of drug abuse happening in rural areas?
In rural areas, we find there's a lot of drug abuse. A lot of them are school dropouts. They don't have money for school fees, and then they end up indulging or getting into the drug industry, and they either are selling drugs or they are using drugs. There are no recreational programs to do it, and they end up the drug frenzy.
Is this the main reason why you decided to do sociology, or did this passion come out because you went through university and decided this is what you wanted to do?
No, I've always had a passion to work with the youth. I've always been driven by making change in the society, and that's the reason why I chose the program, because I always want to make a difference in the society.
What would you say to every young woman in terms of being impactful in their communities?
Always have a drive to make a difference in each and everything that they do. They should have a passion to change someone else's life. No matter what you studied, what you've done, always have an impact in the industry that you're in. So never give up, and always have a passion to leave something for the next generation, because it only begins with you.
Thank you very much. And that was Tembi Banda, an enterprising lady. And I am Chiona Sujani, your host for Time to Engage.
Thank you, the Chioniso. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If global climate change is the defining challenge of our time, as both President Barack Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry have stated on numerous occasions, then the Paris Climate Agreement is the first step toward meeting it head-on. Last December 12th, 195 countries adopted the Paris Agreement, which establishes a global framework to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions and sets a goal for all parties that includes keeping the temperature rise well above 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. In order to do so, the world will need to move toward a clean energy economy. Paris was a turning point in the fight against climate change, said Secretary of State John Kerry.
Paris marked the moment when the world finally decided to heed the ever-rising mountain of evidence that had been piling up for years. It marked the moment that we put to rest once and for all the debate over whether climate change is real and began instead to galvanize our focus on how, as a global community, we are going to address the irrefutable reality that nature is changing at an increasingly rapid pace due to our own choices.
On April 22nd, a signing agreement took place at the United Nations in New York. Over 170 parties, including the United States, signed the agreement, and over a dozen have already joined. But in order for the agreement to go into effect, it must first be accepted, approved, or ratified by at least 55 parties that collectively emit at least 55% of the world's greenhouse gases. After joining the Paris Agreement, countries will begin to implement the agreement so that the world can accelerate the transition to low-carbon, climate-resilient economies. The urgency of this challenge is only becoming more pronounced, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The United States looks forward to formally joining this agreement this year, and we call on all of our international partners to do so.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about leaked Panama Papers, in which some Zimbabweans are featuring in a searchable data released on Monday by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists.
And please note that we'll be live streaming this show today.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Many Zimbabweans assisted by a Panamanian law firm, Mossack Fonseca, to set up offshore accounts appear in the Panama Papers.
Some Zimbabweans say the central bank should offer amnesty to more than 280 local business people accused of externalizing millions of dollars.
And a high court judge has paved the way for the possible suspension pending dismissal of Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.